My name is Hannah Vandewall. I'm 21 years old. Today is October 11th, 2017, and I'm speaking with Jasmine Mabineau, who is my very good friend, my member at large for my sorority, and one of the biggest inspirations in my life. We are recording this interview in De Pere, Wisconsin. So, do you want to tell me a little bit about where you're from?
So, I am from Lafayette, Louisiana. It is like smack dab in the middle of Louisiana, South Louisiana. I want to say Lafayette Parish, like one of the biggest parishes in Louisiana. Home to all food Cajun, country ass people. what else? My grandmother, one of the best people in my life, and good food. So
you said your parish down there, does that have a lot of influence in your life? Because that's not as big up here. I mean, it's very Catholic up here, but how does your parish, like, influence you?
So the way my parish is set up, it's like Lafayette, Scott, Doosan, like surrounding cities, and like I have literally been to all of them. Family members, my grandmother's side of the family lives in like on one side in Scott, my grandfather's family lives in like where it's from, Cairn Crow. So it's like I have the best of both worlds because it's just like so much history in both. Like the graveyards that I visit are very fascinating to me because it's just like, man, like people are scared to go there, but I think it's so, you find that like so many people are resting here, you know, like the bodies are there. And this is just one place where many people who probably don't even know each other come and visit people that they love. So I don't know. I think my parish is just, I don't know. Leaving it made me appreciate it so much more. So, yeah.
Okay. So why did you choose St. Norbert?
The underlying reason, it was just like, I had an uncle who was a really bad diabetic and horrible drug addict. And my grandma likes to say that he was good for everybody but himself. And so my uncle, when he was alive, he, oh my gosh, would just always like just tell me that I was going to do some great things. And he was like really my best friend growing up. So in a dream, and I don't tell many people this because it's kind of weird, but in a dream, I saw my uncle, and, you know, when you're a drug addict, like, it's, like, your body's, like, really small, it's deteriorating and stuff, but in the dream, my uncle was, like, healthy and plump and everything, and he was with this woman, and he was getting out of a car, and I was like, Uncle Bab, like, you're not coming? And he was like, no, you and your mom and your grandmother, y'all are going on a long journey, and I immediately woke up. And my mom and grandmother at the time, they were on their way to see my cousin in prison. And I called them and I said, Mom, I'm moving to Wisconsin. And that's it. That is why I came here. Because in my dream, my uncle said, we're going on a long journey. And I was just like, that was my sign that I prayed for. Like, I'm not going nowhere until I hear from God or whoever that, like, that's what's meant for me.
So how did you hear about St. Norbert then?
I had a mentor who at the time, her friend was about to be ordained as an Norbertine priest. And he told me about St. Norbert. He's like, do you want to go to school out of state? I was like, yeah, definitely. He told me about St. Norbert and then a school 2 hours from me that my godmother went to and then a school in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was Philander Smith. And I got scholarships from all of them, you know, but Xavier was, it's a private Catholic institution like this one, very expensive. Philander Smith, I was accepted as a provisional student, and so the aid wasn't as much as St. Norbert and Xavier. And so I was just like, I've never been to Wisconsin before. Let's go. Like, let's just do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, my life is just based on, like, chances. Like, take a chance, man. Like, you never know what you might, like, you know, get from that opportunity. So,
what kind of differences have you noticed between Louisiana and Wisconsin?
Oh my God, so many differences. I'd say the difference in the culture being that at home, literally everywhere you go, you hear that accent, that drawl, that it's like, you know, people have like grown up here, had their kids here. Just like one thing in like how we go out. So when I first came here, like, oh, you going out? And I was like, oh yeah, is there a club? And they're like, no, like we're going to a house party. I'm like, what? Like that was odd for me. And I went to parties when I was in high school and stuff. But when you say going out, I thought you were going to the clubs. You know, you can be 18 to get in and stuff like that. Something else, I'd say, the hospitality here is very different. Like I think I've experienced a lot of Midwest hospitality, no doubt about it. But in the South, I think people are a little bit more direct if they don't like you or care for you. But here, it's like people mask it with that Midwest niceness. And being who I am and having the grandmother and mom that I have, like, I can't be that. If I don't fool with you, you will know, you know? And here, I think a lot of people just know we have to be very nice, wholesome Christian people, like, you know, and I'm like, no, you don't have to put up with people's shit, like, you don't. So yeah, I think that is one thing that I'm just like, that's how I know I'm not home. So yeah, just a couple things. Okay.
So what was your childhood like?
I had a crazy childhood, I like to think, but I survived. So my grandparents raised me, and mom was 17 when she had me, so I lived with them most of my life. So I was surrounded by, like, older people who played cards and drank and stuff like that. But it was a lot of, like, richness in that. And then when I did live with my mom and my stepdad, who they were together for, like, 16 years, he was my dad, like, honestly. And he was very abusive to my mom. So, like, I recall nights when I had to, like, be like, mom, like, you know, can you sleep with me tonight and stuff? And they would be fighting, and he would, like, muffle her mouth and take her into the room. And all I could just hear was, like, her trying to fight back. And I'm in my room, like, and I couldn't, I felt like I couldn't do anything. And, like, so it was like that. But at the same time, like, I remember just being, like, loved on and supported by my grandparents, by my mom and stepdad. But I just remember they had a very abusive relationship, verbally and sometimes physically, because, like, he had a drug problem and he sold drugs. And it's like we all reap the benefits of his job, but at the end of the day, like, we suffered too. My childhood was, like, rocky dealing with that. Like, I remember when he got me a dog, and I named dog JoJo after my best friend, and there are nights when, like, I just let JoJo out, you know, just so she could walk around in the house and stuff, and that dog would, like, just come in my bed and lay with me, and I, like, man, like, that was so special to me, that, like, at a time where I felt like I didn't really have friends or nobody really understood me, like, my dog just knew that I just needed somebody to just lay with me.
Dogs just know. Okay. So on a little bit of a lighter note, what kind of things are you passionate about?
Oh my God. So I like to think that, like, I'm so very odd, because people ask me, I think of everything. Like, I love poetry and writing. I love to travel. I love, like, speaking, like, to people. And I'm really passionate about that, because, like, I feel like people need to know certain things. And I feel like I know, like, not a lot, just saying, oh, I know a lot. But I've just experienced certain things that have given me so much perspective. And then when I was, like, in middle school and stuff, I didn't have many friends. Like, I'm so used to being alone from that. And then I was like, oh my God, I know everybody hates me and my friends. But in my adult life, like, I'm like, I'm thankful that I had that time to know how to be alone. So I don't know, like, I'm passionate about people loving themselves. I'm passionate about people, like, getting wisdom. I'm passionate about people finding their passions. I'm passionate about just, like, listening to people when they speak, just because that's how you let people know that they're important, when you listen to them. Passionate about, like, living. Like, I just really love life. And I just feel like when people don't love life or their life, I get sad sometimes. And it makes me, like, babe, what happened? You know, like, because I've been through things too, you know, and I don't know, I just didn't let it break me or harden me, because I know that, like, there's so much life to live beyond all that shit. Like, there's so much life and things to do beyond, you know, what happened to you. passionate about school and getting a degree from my grandmother and my mom. I'm just passionate about doing everything my mom didn't do when she was my age.
It's really cool. Where do you draw inspiration from?
Ooh, I get inspiration from a lot of places. Like, I love movies. So, like, I think that's why I watch the same movies all the time, because I'm always searching for something different in it. I get inspiration from poems from my grandmother and my mom, and literally from everybody, whether it be a negative or a positive person. I'm just like, this is what to do, this is what not to do, you know, or just like, I can use this here, I can apply this there. So I'd say, like, I use the world as, like, my, I don't know, what do you call it, like, ocean for inspiration.
So on campus, you've kind of become, like, this beacon of social justice and social change, and I guess I was wondering what sparked your passion for that, and why do you feel that that's so important on this campus and in the world?
So I'm going to just go back to my sixth grade year of middle school, and I was asked to write a speech. And no, I wrote a speech for a class, and then they asked me to, with the Catholic school, so they asked me to read it on Friday for Mass. And I remember getting up on the altar and gotten to the microphone, and I felt so comfortable. And everything I said was just about bettering the students at my school, as Black students, as, you know, like, we, like, looked up to Martin Luther King as, like, somebody who was like, damn, we wanna be Martin. And so, like, I talked about him. I talked about people who made changes and things like that, and how people have paved the way for us to be something better. And so that's where that started. And then I came here. And I saw, like, I was like, damn, I'm fucking different from these. Oh, excuse me. I'm so different from these people. Like, oh, my God. Not just, you know, on the inside, but on the outside as well. And then I met Margaret. And I remember her just being, like, this firecracker, like, wanted to just do things that made people mad. And I was like, what? So then me and her went and talked to Reg Kim, and we were talking about the demonstration and everything. And I was just like, whoa, like, in the back of my mind, I didn't tell them this, but I was like, I have never done anything like this in my life. Like, I'm ready. Like, I am ready for whatever. And I realized, like, things like this, I see why people protest, because they want people to listen. And sometimes sitting in a room with a committee or whatever, they don't hear you. You have to have some action. So, and I think it's important to the world, because there are so many inequalities. There are so many people who are below the poverty line. There are so many people who don't have free lunch. There are so many people who are racially profiled and discriminated against. And it's just like, they are a part of the world too. They are people too. They are fighting just like you. You know, they want some glimmer of hope from somewhere. And I think that's so essential to people being people, hope. Because if they don't have hope, they don't have anything. They don't feel like their lives can get better. They don't feel like their situations can get better. So it's like, I feel that if I can give somebody a sense of hope, even if it's the tiniest bit of hope, that they won't give up on themselves, or they'll fight harder for the people that are around them and the people that need to be fought for.
Are there any people that have inspired you during this?
Let's see. I think not small scale, but Margaret has definitely inspired me. Like, I told her this once. I was like, man, you made me love being Black. Like, cause she just, it's not like she got me being Black, but she got that I was different. And she always talked to me like, even though I'm different, I still brought something special. I still mattered. Like, my voice was loud enough that she, like, my voice within was loud enough that she heard me, that she heard me screaming above everything that was going on, and she listened. And then there's this lady who was my sixth grade teacher, and it turned, like, my surrogate mom. And this woman, like, got divorced, was in an abusive relationship, has, like, been in relationship after relationship, has, like, there have been times when this woman had, like, negative in her bank account and couldn't do, her daughter was in dance and her son was in school, and, like, just literally had odds stacked against her, but she's a teacher. And I saw this woman, like, pick up everything that she had, everything that tried to defeat her, like, all of, like, the doubt, pick it up and, like, move forward and made sure her daughter had this for dancing, made sure her son had new shoes for school, even if the child support check didn't come in, like, and I literally have to think about Dee Dee when, like, I'm like, man, I want to give up. But she has, like, two people counting on her not to give up. And, like, I don't know, like, even without having kids, I'm like, I have people counting on me. So it's like, I can't give up. So I have to say Margaret and Dee Dee for sure.
Are there any other people in your life, not just looking at the side of social justice or anything, but just generally speaking, people who have had an influence in your life?
I don't give her enough credit, but my mom. Like, mom does not have a high school or college education, has worked multiple fast food jobs to make sure I stayed in private school all my life. And if you ask her, like, that's why she did it, to make sure that I had a quality education, that I had the same opportunities as everybody else, even though I didn't have a father and she wasn't married and everything, and she didn't have this six-figure job. She worked hard so that I could have everything. And then now, she has her own business. Now she's doing things the way that she wants to do them. And, like, I have never felt the way I feel about my mom before in my life. Like, especially when she was in the relationship, I just was like, leave. Like, I was like, why are you doing this? But now, like, I respect my mom in such a different way because I understand it now. I understand that love is difficult sometimes. Love is complicated. And, like, I don't know, man, my mom has, her being who she is has, like, propelled me to do what I want to do, like, every aspect. And she may not understand, like, some of my poems, she may not understand what I'm doing in school, but she always is just like, baby, if you want to do it, mama's going to support you, like, that is it. And, oh my God, she's like, I don't give her enough credit for it, but she's an inspiration to me, too.
So, what would you say is the happiest moment of your life?
Happiest moment? It's been so many. So far, I think the happiest moment, like, I just have to say, like, being with people that I love, it does something to me. Like, it's just like when I'm with my best friends or when I'm with my family, like, or I am, like, just at home. Those are some of the best times that I've ever had. And I didn't know how to appreciate them until I left them. But I have to say, being home.
So, have you had a pivotal moment in your life?
Oh, my God, I think a little bit. I want to say when I started talking to Ty last year, I'd been taught very strict things, you don't do this, you don't do that, mended women, and da da da. But this year, it was in July, and me and her started talking again. It's not anything to do with our relationship, but I really reflected, and, like, I realized everything that I thought I wanted as a child, I don't want that. Everything, the way that I pictured my life, is not the way that I want it now. My thought process for my future has definitely changed. And before, I was just like, no, I'm going to have this standard life. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to have this. Had this plan. And then after meeting her and experience, like, doing life with her for a little bit, it reaffirmed some things for me that, like, you don't have to do what people say. You don't have to you know, just because your mom didn't have this doesn't mean you have to live her life. You don't have to live these people's standards of your life. You can live the life that you want, you know. So I'm just at a place right now that I feel like I am much more open to so much than I was before. I'm open to the fact that, like, I might travel the world by myself for the rest of my life, and I'll still be happy because I'm happy from within instead of depending on, you know, external things to make me happy. So I think this July was a pivotal moment where I was like, now you're so much more than that.
So I'm going to ask one more question before we wrap this up. What do you want the world to look like in 15 years?
So 15 years, 15 and 20, that's 36. I'll be 36. So hopefully my children will live in a world where they can be whoever they want to be without the people protesting. Well, like, not say without protest, where there's not, like, people telling them, no, this is the standard, you have to meet the standard. I hope in 15 years there's no correct way to live. There is no standard that you should follow. There's no average, below average, above average. In 15 years, I hope people just realize that people make this world. People make the organizations. People make things happen. And when they learn to love and appreciate and people, that's when the world will be peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
When they look at people as people and not as a diplomat, not as a tyrant, not as the president, but look at people as people. So that's my prayer. That is my hope. That they can just be whoever they want to be. And I hope that the world is filled with not just good people, not just nice people, but with courageous people. People who are willing to put themselves, take themselves off the stove and put other people there so other people can shine, other people can thrive, and other people can have a better quality of life. So in 15 years, I hope the world is more courageous.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.